Welcome to another edition of This Fucking Guy, the show that spotlights one fucking guy making America worse and explains why they suck. I'm Erin Ryan, host of Crooked Media's Hysteria podcast.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco, the other host of Crooked Media's Hysteria podcast.
Now, Alyssa, we've covered some shady characters before. Justice Gargoyle Leonard Leo, wing woman to the pervert stars Ghislaine Maxwell, Silicon Valley skin tag Peter Thiel.
Most politicians at least pretend to be driven by something beyond raw ambition. But Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard has anamorphed into something new so many times that it's impossible to see her as anything better than a snake.
Oh, Alyssa. It gets crazier. This might be the craziest episode of This Fucking Guy we have ever done. Alyssa, what if I told you that behind Tulsi Gabbard is a mysterious and secretive group that some might call a Hawaiian yoga cult?
Is this the next Lifetime movie we will be producing?
I hope so. So you see, in order to understand the context of who Tulsi Gabbard is, we have to rewind to decades before she was even born, to the 1960s in Hawaii, 2,600 miles away from Gabbard's roots in American Samoa. There, a baseball player with dashed hopes to play in the majors named Chris Butler, a tan, handsome surfer bro whose dad was a big-time communist, was getting real into Eastern religions.
Wouldn't be the first white guy to get weird in Hawaii.
More specifically, Butler, like a lot of white guys in the 1960s, got really into yoga. That kind of spun into his involvement in the Hare Krishna movement.
Hare Krishnas are still around today. They shave their heads and wear orange robes and hang out in Union Square Park in New York. The group is also known as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, or ISKCON. Listeners and viewers also might remember Hare Krishna as the cult-like group that Paul Kinsey joined in season 5 of Mad Men.
Oh, do I remember that? For legal purposes, we're going to have to be careful with the way we use cult in this episode, because there's a lot of stuff that is cult-adjacent, cult ish. In the Hare Krishna's case, the religious movement that shares some traits that scholars usually attribute to cults, high control expectations like vows of poverty and celibacy and aggressive shunning of outsiders. But generally speaking, if Hare Krishna is a cult, it's cult flavored in the same way that LaCroix is grapefruit flavored.
Copy that.
Okay. So what Chris Butler started was an offshoot to that offshoot. Butler often arranged marriages between his devotees. Butler's followers didn't have to shave their heads. They ditched the robes. It was easier for them to blend in with the rest of society that way. Butler taught his followers, who started out as mostly 18 to 22-year-old young women, that flowers, that flowers scream when they're picked and trees scream when they're trimmed. Of course, given the screaming trees, eating animals was out of the question. Butler followers are strict vegetarians. Butler went by the name Cy Young at the beginning. I wonder if that was a baseball reference, and apparently was big into hallucinogens. We know this from a pamphlet that he self-published at the time called Cy Speaks, Pleasure is the Goal.
Why can I hear that title in Will Ferrell's voice?
Butler and his followers' deviation from Hare Krishna's core beliefs caused a rift between him and the actual spiritual leader of Hare Krishna. That and Butler's insistence that he be the only source of spiritual guidance for his followers. Butler's group split off from the original group in 1977, rebranding itself the Science of Identity Foundation. One critic of the group described the Science of Identity Foundation as Hare Krishna's alt-right.
Why is that? Bad graphic design?
Yes, that and the fact that some other core tenets of the group's beliefs, according to several press reports, are extreme homophobia and being anti-Islam.
So is the Science of Identity Foundation a cult?
So there are varying definitions of what a cult is, but most scholars who study these organizations agree that cults center on unquestioning allegiance to a charismatic leader, opposition to social norms, isolation, exploitation, and rigid rules. Okay. Some scholars refer to these groups as new religious movements, or NRMs, since the word cult has a negative connotation.
How does the Science of Identity Foundation fit that definition?
Well, for one thing, former members report that he's worshipped as a near god. Independent journalist in Hawaii, Christine Grelo, who is widely seen as the go-to source on all things SIF, has reported that SIF members in particular are obsessed with Butler's feet.
It's disgusting.
Mixing sand he'd walked on and his toenail clippings into food.
That's repulsive.
I think that this is the first time on This Fucking Guy we've gotten into foot stuff.
Yep.
There's also social isolation. The group distrusts public education and, ironically, science. It encourages members to either homeschool their kids or send their children to attend special SIF schools far from their families.
And if people leave the group or speak out against Butler, let me guess, they get ostracized.
That would be correct.
Sounds a little culty to me.
Butler had aspirations that were bigger than his little corner of Kailua, though. He had his sights set on political power. In the 1970s, a mysterious political party called Independence for Godly Government popped up in Hawaii. In 1976, 14 people ran for office in Hawaii as members of that party. An investigation by the Honolulu Advertiser eventually tied the party back to Butler's group.
How does the group make money?
Well, according to Christine Graylow, the group owns the Hawaii-based down-to-earth chain of vegetarian grocery stores. Cute, right? Well, the chain's parent company is owned by a company called QI Group, which also owns a multi-level health and wellness marketing company called QNet, which is widely characterized as a Ponzi scheme. A handful of executives from QNet have been charged with financial crimes around the world.
An MLM, like LuLaRoe.
I know I'm getting in the weeds here, but all this is important information for setting the scene. One of the major financial supporters of SIF in the 1980s was a longtime New Zealand devotee named Patrick Bowler, who turns out was running hundreds of tons of hashish from India, Pakistan, and Afghanistan into Europe and North America, operating under the codenames Top Hat and The Guru. He was arrested in Switzerland in 1997 and later cooperated with law enforcement. In 2008, he was sentenced to 12 years in an American prison, but was released after 2 years.
The first appearance of hashish into this fucking guy.
I told you, it's one of the wildest ones we've ever done, if not the wildest. Now, of course, SIF's official channels deny that Bowler was ever officially a member. But former members who have spoken to journalists claim that everybody in the group knew who he was and that he'd been devoted to Butler since the 1970s. An OG, in other words. Money from Bowler's billion-dollar drug empire helped build a SIF school in the Philippines. Remember that for later.
Hold on, Erin. I'm just getting a pen. Make sure I'm writing this all down.
While Butler's group is secretive today, they were less shy about having a media presence in the past. In the 1980s and 1990s, Butler hosted a public access program called Jagadguru Speaks. These days, he rarely makes public appearances, but the group has a YouTube channel with plenty of archival footage of Butler on it. Now, with that very long windup, we arrive at the Gabbard family. According to Tulsi Gabbard's aunt, Sina, one Sunday in the 1970s, her brother Mike Gabbard, his American wife Carol, and their three sons showed up to a family dinner and announced that they joined a new religious group and were strict vegetarians now. The group they joined was the Science of Identity Foundation. Sina later told New York Magazine's Carrie Howley that when she went to their home after the conversation, the pictures on the walls had been replaced with photos of Chris Butler.
Now, this is when they still lived in American Samoa, which is a long way from Hawaii.
That's right. Tulsi Gabbard was born in American Samoa on April 12th, 1981, to a half Samoan dad and a white mom.
I thought Tulsi Gabbard was Indian. Wasn't she the co-chair of the Indian American Caucus in Congress?
Yes, she was, but she isn't Indian. She's publicly identified herself as Hindu since her 2012 political campaign, even though members of SIF have told Christine Graylow that the group does not consider itself Hindu. A lot of people think that she's Indian, but she's got three white grandparents. Her mom's name is Carol. For God's sake. Anyway, in 1983, Mike and Carol moved their family all the way to Hawaii to be closer to Butler and the nucleus of SIF. The Gabbards became one of the inner circle of important SIF members. Carol was the group's treasurer. Mike was Chris Butler's secretary of personal affairs, a position reserved for one of the group's most important and devoted followers. One former SIF member who grew up with Gabbard says that every Sunday, Butler's followers would gather on a beach and wait for Butler to show up and deliver a sermon. Gabbard's dad, Mike, would lead sing-alongs on his guitar. In fact, pulling out his guitar was probably the thing that Mike Gabbard was most known for, apart from the SIF stuff. There's even video of him leading a sing-along with the family that would be at home on a Japanese karaoke machine.
Wait, Erin, what did the Gabbards do to make a living?
So, SIF-affiliated things? Mike Gabbard had a background as an educator and helped run a private SIF school on Oahu called the Panumaloa School. Tulsi, her three brothers, and one sister were homeschooled since Butler distrusted public education and SIF children were discouraged from hanging out with kids from outside of the organization. The family also ran a vegetarian restaurant inside of a down-to-earth grocery store, which is, as you recall, the grocery store chain owned by SIF. Other members of the group bought him out in 1992, though, after he made some incendiary comments about gay people on his homophobic radio show that was called I Shit You Not, Let's Talk Straight Hawaii.
Wait, what? Stop. Tell me. I can't.
Okay, yeah. Tulsi Gabbard's dad, in addition to being guy at party with guitar, is well known in Hawaii for being one of the state's most famous homophobes. He was interviewed by Honolulu Magazine in 1992 and said, quote, homosexuality is not normal, not healthy, morally and scripturally wrong. He also claimed that a repeal of sodomy laws and recharacterization of homosexuality as no longer a mental illness were responsible for the AIDS epidemic. The final straw was when he said that he'd hire a straight person over a gay person if they were equally qualified for a job, which led to gay rights activists protesting his restaurant and the radio station canceling Let's Talk Straight Hawaii.
You love to see a grassroots movement be effective.
I mean, of all the places to be anti-gay. Chris Butler did not want children to watch TV or learn about evolution or history. And yet, he was interested in getting them into politics. In a 2017 interview with The New Yorker, Butler described Gabbard as one of his star pupils. But for a few years, she was educated far, far away from her guru. At some point in the 1990s, Tulsi was sent to SIFS school in the Philippines.
The one funded by the hashish money guy.
Yeah, that's the one. Tulsi never mentions this now, or she obfuscates. Although there are some archived mentions of her spending 2 years at an all-girls missionary school in the Philippines, which is not totally true. According to sources who attended the schools, the SIF school in Baguio City, Philippines, was set up to resemble a type of school common in India, where students live and study directly under a guru.
Except Chris Butler did not live in Baguio City, Philippines. He was still chilling on his beach in Hawaii.
Correct. So okay. Instead of being taught by the real thing, kids at the school would listen to recorded sermons from Butler and bow to pictures of him, in addition to chanting for hours each day, often in a dark room. Former attendees reported sleep and food deprivation and also say some of the Butler lectures the children listened to graphically described gay sex.
Quick question. When did Tulsi and the other kids learn, like, math?
Hard to say. I was thinking it too. After high school, Gabbard attended Leeward Community College for a few years, but dropped out to run for an open state Senate seat at the tender age of 21. She had no relevant experience to be a public servant, but she had the backing of SIF behind her. Members of the group knocked doors and publicly supported her campaign, and she won. And at the time, she was working closely with her dad, Mike, who was still pursuing his passion of hating gay people. He had formed a few anti-gay groups in the 1990s, in addition to his radio show that got shit-canned. The groups were called Stop Promoting Homosexuality Hawaii, which later expanded to Stop Promoting Homosexuality International, along with the Alliance for Traditional Marriage and Values. Mike Gabbard was front and center in the fight to amend the Hawaii Constitution to define marriage as between one man and one woman. A 1998 ad Gabbard cut with his kids, including Tulsi, compared gay marriage to human beings marrying their dogs.
None of this hateful wretchedness stopped Mike Gabbard from pursuing politics himself, though. In 2002, the same year 21-year-old Tulsi was elected to the state Senate, he won a seat on the nonpartisan Honolulu City Council. Meanwhile, Carol Gabbard was on the State Board of Education despite homeschooling all of her kids.
The Gabbards walked so Moms for Liberty could run. It was also in 2002 that Tulsi got married for the first time to a man named Eduardo Tamayo. Surprise, surprise. Tamayo's family was also important in SIF. Tamayo was the nephew of one of the people who was running that SIF school in the Philippines. Tulsi characterizes him as her childhood best friend.
In 2004, emboldened by his time served on city council, Mike Gabbard, who was a Republican at the time, ran for U.S. Congress against Democratic incumbent Ed Case. Around this time, Gabbard was claiming publicly that he was Catholic. Honolulu Magazine reached out to ask about his reported ties to Chris Butler and SIF, and it was Tulsi that wrote back indignantly.
Tulsi wrote, quote, I smell a skunk. It's clear to me that you're acting as a conduit for the Honolulu Weekly and other homosexual extremist supporters of Ed Case.
Homosexual extremist supporters, my stars! Early in her political career, Gabbard was anti-abortion and anti-gay, just like her dad.
And her cult, alleged cult. You'll find that lashing out in response to questions about SIF is part of the Gabbard family playbook.
This was version 1.0 of the frenetic, opportunistic shape-shifting that has been Tulsi Gabbard's shameless quest for power. After just one term in office, Tulsi joined the Hawaii National Guard in order to, quote, go after the terrorists who attacked us. She was sworn in on the floor of the state Senate in a move that a reporter would later characterize as a bit much.
She served honorably, though, in a medical unit in Iraq in a place grimly referred to as Mortaritaville due to it being under heavy fire. She credits her two tours of duty for several convenient changes of heart when it came to political issues. Alas, Gabbard's marriage did not survive her time in the military, but her political ambitions only sharpened. When she came back from her second tour, she and Eduardo divorced. In 2010, she won a seat on the Honolulu City Council with her sights set on a congressional run. And in 2011, to the shock of many, she was endorsed by Emily's List, a powerful political organization that supports Democratic pro-choice women.
A former staffer from Emily's List told The Atlantic's Elaine Godfrey that Tulsi seemed kind of fake and untrustworthy when she answered questions about her political views. The former staffer said she was willing to do or say whatever. It was like she had absolutely no moral compass.
That didn't stop her from being anointed the next big thing in the Democratic Party when she won the congressional election in 2012. Nancy Pelosi called her an emerging star. At least one party insider was warned that Gabbard was close to some anti-gay freaks in Hawaii, but I guess the Democrats were so horny for a young, telegenic, veteran woman of color who self-identified as a Hindu that they ignored her thin resume and troubling past political views, which she hadn't even directly apologized for or addressed. President Obama himself pushed for her to be made vice chair of the DNC.
Well, I'm sure that President Obama wasn't aware of her thin mathematical credentials. Gabbard was sworn in on the Bhagavad Gita, a holy Hindu text, and quickly made friends in Congress. She'd pal around with Kristen Sinema and sometimes meet up with Mark Wayne Mullen to do CrossFit. That's not a joke.
Every episode, we get to a point where we accidentally stumble onto a nightmare blunt rotation. Everybody was on the Tulsi train. There was even a slobbering Vogue profile from 2013, which tongue-bathed the freshman congressman who, this side of 10 years ago, was railing against homosexual extremists. Soon, however, it was clear that Gabbard didn't have any views and probably should never have been trusted. She wouldn't show up for meetings or conference calls. She co-chaired the Congressional Caucus on India and Indian Americans and represented herself as somebody who could improve relations between the U.S. and India, even though until 2014, she'd never even been to India.
Then there's the matter of her record. As a member of Congress, apart from confusing her colleagues, she did a whole lot of nothing. She was known to introduce so-called messaging bills, which are pieces of legislation that have no chance of passing. She only passed one piece of legislation. She'd often sit on the Republican side of the chamber. People were confused by her.
Then, around 2013, a bunch of her original staffers resigned and were replaced with people who were closely associated with the Science of Identity Foundation. I told you that that long windup made sense. In 2015, after a bit more staff churn, she hired a 30-year-old named Kainoa Penarosa to be her chief of staff. Penarosa was a former health food business sales manager with no government or policy experience. But he is the son of Bill Penarosa, who was the chair of that shady political party SIF tried to launch in the 1970s. Kainoa's wife, also SIF-affiliated, was her campaign finance director.
Then, in 2015, Tulsi married Abraham Williams, who knew, who was her office manager's son. Williams is 8 years younger than Tulsi, which, slay, but his family is also deeply affiliated with SIF. He had been the videographer for Gabbard's campaign.
In a piece titled, "Tulsi Gabbard is Not Your Friend," leftist publication Jacobin pointed to Gabbard's troubling pattern of anti-Muslim animus. She and a minority of Democrats joined with the House GOP in passing the SAFE Act in 2015, which stemmed the flow of refugees from Syria and Iraq. She later claimed that she was actually trying to save the refugee program.
Totally.
In June of that year, according to the New York Times, Gabbard was part of a congressional group that visited a Syrian refugee camp near the Turkish border. During that visit, she asked a question so stupid that the translator was too embarrassed to translate it correctly.
Oh, wow, I must know. What was the question?
Hysteria is brought to you by Honeylove. What do I personally like most about Honeylove? Probably that I can put it on and not spend the rest of the day thinking, I'm wearing shapewear. It's so comfortable that you forget you're wearing it. We're coming up on wedding season, guys, whether you're ready or not. But one way to get more ready than you are currently is to make sure you have shapewear that is going to go underneath the clothes you're wearing to the wedding, feel comfortable, feel breezy, and that won't roll down when you try to move in any way, shape, or form. That's why Honeylove rules. It is an independent, female-founded brand. All products are intelligently designed by women who actually wear them, including founder Betsy, who is highly involved in the development of each product. They recently launched their new crossover Contour Bra, which features their best-selling wireless crossover bra design plus built-in molded light foam pads for extra support and a beautifully contoured shape. Their bras are supportive and wire-free thanks to bonding technology that lifts without underwire. You deserve a bra that's lightweight and comfortable without sacrificing support. Honey Love Shapewear is designed to move with you. Say goodbye to pesky shapewear that rolls down as you hit the dance floor. The shapewear uses targeted compression to enhance your curves instead of squeezing them. It's designed to work with your body, not against it. And it's just as easy to get on as it is to take off, and was made with a convenient opening in the panty area for easy bathroom trips, no costume change required. I gotta say, the achievement that I feel when I use Honey Love and I don't have to disrobe whatsoever. Honey Love products feature lingerie-inspired design details that you want to show off and high-quality fabrics that feel like a dream against skin. Treat yourself to the most advanced bras and shapewear on the market. Use our exclusive link to save 20% off Honey Love at honeylove.com/hysteria. That's honeylove.com/hysteria. After you check out, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Experience the new standard in comfort and support with Honey Love.
Are you concerned about microplastics in your home? Blue Land makes it easy to make sustainable choices. Blue Land cleaning sprays, toilet bowl cleaner, and dishwasher and laundry detergent tablets are free from dyes, parabens, and harsh chemicals. Blue Land is a certified B Corp and Leaping Bunny cruelty-free certified. Their formulas are EPA Safer Choice certified, and many products have also earned Cradle to Cradle's Gold Material Health Certificate. Get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/crooked. blueland.com/crooked.
She asked a bunch of little girls who had been burned by Assad's air attacks on the camp how they knew that it was Assad and the Russians who had bombed them from the air and not ISIS.
Whew, boy. Well, ISIS didn't have an air force.
No, ISIS did not have an air force. Gabbard later denied that she'd ever asked that very stupid question. In 2016, Tulsi stepped down from her position in the DNC to endorse Bernie Sanders, even appearing alongside him on the campaign trail. And after Donald Trump defeated Hillary Clinton that November, she suddenly switched allegiances again, cozying up to Steve Bannon and attending meetings in Trump Tower with the president-elect.
It's really giving Anna Delvey. After years of caping for the Syrian regime in 2017, Gabbard flew to Syria to meet twice with its bloodthirsty ghoul leader, Bashar al-Assad, in the middle of him inflicting atrocities on his own country.
The original plan for the Syria visit, the one the House Ethics Committee approved, was to fly to Syria and bring attention to the horrors of the civil war. But then, to the surprise of even her staff, Gabbard met with al-Assad, al-Assad's wife, and one of his top foreign ministers without telling anybody in advance.
Wow. She fucked over her staff and kind of America.
Yeah. And Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi was apparently invited to her wedding. He didn't go, but he did send a representative. Let's talk a bit about Tulsi Gabbard's cozy relationship with Indian Prime Minister Modi. Modi's a bad dude. He is a far-right Hindu nationalist that has previously served as chief minister of Gujarat. In 2002, a train fire in the region killed 59 people, mainly Hindu pilgrims.
Riots erupted in response, targeting Muslim neighborhoods. The police, under Modi's direction, basically let it happen. Over 1,000 people, mostly Muslims, were killed. Because of his involvement in the riots, the U.S. refused to issue a travel visa to him for years.
Hindu nationalist groups affiliated with Modi's political party and aligned ideologically with Modi counted among their members some of the biggest donors to Gabbard's early congressional campaigns. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars from people affiliated with a group called RSS, the parent group of Modi's political party, and BJP, the party itself.
Indian Hindu nationalists got what they paid for in Tulsi. She helped organize his first trip to the U.S. after being elected India's prime minister. She appeared alongside BJP officials at an event. She has met with RSS officials a handful of times and appeared at RSS events in India as well.
She voted against a House resolution that would have rebuked India's record of violence against religious minorities, including Muslims, justifying this by saying that the resolution would hurt relations with India. But then, later, she introduced one of her trademark meaningless gesture bills that would have rebuked the government of Bangladesh, which is majority Muslim, for persecuting religious minorities. But when she's questioned about her coziness with Modi or RSS, she's been known to answer with a word salad followed by whiny accusations of religious bigotry against Hindus. The more sanctimonious Tulsi's rebuke of the question, the more dangerous the question.
Years later, when Gabbard was on the verge of being confirmed as Trump's director of national intelligence, the Science of Identity Foundation hired a PR firm to wage email campaigns accusing people opposed to Gabbard of spreading anti-Hindu hate.
Then there was Tulsi's strange obsession with the phrase radical Islamic terrorism. By 2015, she was hounding President Obama for not using that phrase or for identifying radical Islam as the primary enemy in America's fight against ISIS. She even harped about it with Bill Maher, implying that the cause of terrorism was Islam itself, not poverty or other factors. She said, give them a big house, give them a skateboard, send them on their way. You think that's going to solve the problem? It's not.
By this point, people were so confused by Tulsi's moral hollowness that Hawaii's Democratic Party's LGBT caucus backed her primary opponent in 2016.
Jeez.
I mean, yikes. After supporting her candidacy before, this was partly due to the fact that in 2015, she told an outlet that her personal views on gay marriage and abortion were still the same as they always had been, but that she had evolved in how involved the government should be in those issues.
So in other words, she was still a bigot, but just doing it quietly. It wasn't until 2019, when Gabbard was poised to jump into the field seeking the Democratic nomination for president, that she finally apologized for parroting her parents' hateful anti-gay bigotry that her dad taught her at the direction of the homophobic yoga guru that dictated many aspects of their lives.
Aloha. In my past, I said and believed things that were wrong. And worse, they were very hurtful to people in the LGBTQ community and to their loved ones. Many years ago, I apologized for my words and, more importantly, for the negative impact that they had.
Gabbard's long-shot presidential bid was another puzzling move. She never polled higher than a percentage or two nationally. She basically alienated all of the Democratic establishment, and her policy positions fell apart like an Amazon box left out in the rain under any needling at all. Despite this, she impressed America's dumb stepbrother, Joe Rogan, who had her on his podcast a total of at least five times, starting in 2018.
Across more than 10 hours of airtime, Gabbard somehow completely avoids getting into discussions of the weird religious sect she grew up inside of.
Which is so weird, right? Because yes. Aren't, like, conspiracies and cults, isn't that like Rogan's shit?
It's like his shtick, yeah.
That's his shit. By the 2020 presidential election, Rogan was declaring Gabbard his girl.
Didn't end up moving the needle much because she had dropped out of the race by March of that year.
I can understand why an idiot might be attracted to Tulsi Gabbard as a politician, because in her career, she's shape-shifted so many times that you can probably find an instance of her supporting a random assortment of viewpoints that you support. By the time she dropped out of the presidential race, Tulsi had stumbled upon something that sort of connects all the political moves she'd make. There was a clear ceiling to her appeal among the general public, but becoming popular with the general public isn't the only path to power. You can get there another way, by targeting powerful people who are easily fooled, and then by telling those people everything that they want to hear.
Right, like when you're playing peekaboo with a baby, you don't need to convince everybody in the room that you disappeared, you just need to fool the baby.
Lucky for Tulsi Gabbard, there were plenty of powerful babies around for her to fool.
Hillary Clinton suggested in a podcast appearance in 2019 that Gabbard was a Russian asset, which led Gabbard to sue Clinton. She eventually dropped the lawsuit. But there have been plenty of times when there's little, if any, breathing room between Russian state propaganda and what comes out of Tulsi Gabbard's mouth, especially since the Russian invasion of Ukraine in 2022. Then she blamed NATO and Joe Biden for ignoring Russia's legitimate security concerns.
It sure doesn't help that she's got that gray streak in her hair, which makes her look like a minor henchman in a Pixar movie.
Gabbard's Transformers-style transition from Bernie Bro semi-truck to killer Decepticon MAGA darling was underway. Or maybe she was just being who she always was, or was pretending she wasn't. In December 2020, shortly before fucking off out of Congress, probably forever, she introduced two anti-abortion pieces of legislation and a bill designed to protect women and girls from the harrowing specter of trans women playing sports with them.
In October 2022, she announced that she was no longer a Democrat.
I can no longer remain in today's Democratic Party that's under the complete control of an elitist cabal of warmongers who are driven by cowardly wokeness, who divide us by racializing every issue and stoking anti-white racism, who actively work to undermine our God-given freedoms that are enshrined in our Constitution, weaponize the national security state to go after their political opponents, and above all, who are dragging us ever closer to nuclear war.
I believe
in a government
we don't
that's
want to do
of
that.
The people, by the people, and for the people. If you can no longer stomach the direction that the so-called woke Democratic Party ideologues are taking our country, then I invite you to join me.
Oh, Tulsi. Yeah, what happened to her gentle aloha? Aloha. I like gay people now. She also launched a podcast because of course she did. I highly recommend listening to it if you'd like to hear an untrustworthy person speak with the same tone and cadence they'd use to try to trick a cornered animal into a trap. In 2024, Tulsi followed the smell of power like a dog flushing out a rotisserie chicken from an unsecured trash can and showed up at CPAC, where she was a featured speaker who railed against the threat of the deep state and endless wars.
Then this double-crossing bitch started campaigning alongside Donald Trump.
When you look at the party of Kamala Harris, for example, she is anti-freedom, she is pro-censorship, she is pro-open borders, and she is pro-war. Without even pretending to care about peace, as President Trump talked about, she has shamelessly embraced the endorsement and support of warmongers like Dick Cheney and Liz Cheney, and others who care more about power and feeding the military-industrial complex than they care about you. President Trump has pledged to end wars, not start them. And it is because of my love for our country, and specifically because of the leadership that President Trump has brought to transform the Republican Party and bring it back to the party of the people and the party of peace, that I'm proud to stand here with you today, President Trump, and announce that I'm joining the Republican Party.
How's that going, Tulsi?
Every single point, you can go point by point and just reply all evidence to the contrary.
Sure, Tulsi. Everybody loves a convert, and Tulsi has played the convert over and over again in her vulture-like quest to pick the meat off other people's kills. And like we said, by this point in her career of ideological switchbacks, most people with two eyes and a brain could probably tell that this was another barely disguised fit of raw opportunism. But she doesn't need to fool everybody, just the one big guy who has been known to be fooled by people willing to flatter him.
We probably should have seen her turn to Trump coming back in 2019 when, in his impeachment trial, she voted present.
Her loyalty to Trump was rewarded, as she's always been rewarded for embarrassing prostration before men who believe themselves to be gods. In 2025, shortly after Trump's second inauguration, she was nominated to be the director of national intelligence.
This was great news to Russian state media, who proclaimed the CIA and FBI are trembling at the news.
Now, here's who was trembling. People who think the person in charge of U.S. intelligence should know what the fuck they're doing.
Yes, usually the DNI is someone with, experience. The person who preceded her in the position had previously served as deputy director of the CIA and deputy national security advisor. Gabbard hadn't even managed a down-to-earth vegetarian grocery store, much less 18 U.S. intelligence agency and a budget of nearly $75 billion. Nearly 100 ex-national security officials signed onto a letter reminding senators that Gabbard's nomination was alarming. A former member of CIF named Anita Van Dyne has also been sounding the alarm, asserting in a letter to Congress that Chris Butler and the Science of Identity Foundation is actually the one dictating what Gabbard does politically. Nevertheless, because nothing matters, Tulsi Gabbard was confirmed by a vote of 52-48, with Mitch McConnell voting against her. You know you're shady when Mitch the long game McConnell is like, I don't like the cut of your jib.
As spy chief, it's not clear whether Gabbard has stood for anything except for that one picture where she's creeping guiltily around the Fulton County voting machines, looking more suspicious than anybody has ever looked in a photo ever. Tulsi further demonstrated her obsequiousness by claiming repeatedly that the so-called Russiagate scandal, that is, the intelligence assessment that Russia was attempting to influence the outcome of the 2016 election in Donald Trump's favor, was a hoax. But the claims she's made regarding newly declassified documents that she cited don't prove what she's claiming they prove.
Mainstream media has pointed this out and debunked her claims pretty thoroughly. But again, she's not trying to fool anybody. Just give her main fool the fooling that he wants.
Tulsi has also carried water for Trump by going on a podcast tour around the MAGA-sphere, like the time she appeared on Megyn Kelly's show. On that appearance, she made the wild and unchallenged by Kelly claim that maybe there were labs in Ukraine that were developing biological weapons, you know, like the one she claims China built before the COVID-19 pandemic. Unchallenged!
Isn't that just like a Russian propaganda talking point?
Yes! Yes, okay. It is, Alyssa. Like most political grifters, Tulsi has also written a book. 2024's For Love of Country, Leaving the Democrat Party Behind.
See, you know she's in the in-group because she did that annoying signifier that they do, which is to drop the ick from Democratic.
Yeah, doesn't she want the ick in there? The whole point is that she has the ick. Keep the ick, Tulsi. Anyway, it debuted at number 4 on the New York Times bestseller list, but was listed with that asterisk dagger the publication includes with titles with numbers boosted by bulk sales. And guess where most of those bulk sales came from?
Tell me.
A PAC that Tulsi Gabbard's political arm runs.
This is a common cheat for political books, most of which are ghostwritten and most of which only journalists read.
As somebody who used to be one of those journalists, I can attest. Tulsi's book, unsurprisingly, does not mention the fact that she was raised in the Science of Identity Foundation, but as recently as 2015, she was referring to Chris Butler as her guru dev, meaning her main teacher, in this video she made to celebrate an important anniversary to the Hare Krishna movement.
My guru dev, Srila Siddhasirupananda Paramahamsa.
She's also been silent when Trump has made a fool of her silly Party of Peace proclamations. When the administration attacked Iran alongside Israel, Gabbard, the anti-war firebrand, had little to say beyond reading a few lines off a piece of paper. Now, I'm old enough to remember when she was running for president and was selling merch that said, "No war with Iran" on it.
Basically, everything she's ever said about herself has been a misrepresentation of the truth, a flat-out lie, or a hollow statement meant to keep her as close as possible to the powerful person she's currently sucking up to. She's dodged all questions about the Science of Identity Foundation or deflected them with sanctimonious accusations of religious bigotry. This despite the fact that she continues to be married to another member of the group and employs several members of the group and receives political support from said group.
If it looks like a duck and walks like a duck, it's Hindu-phobic bigotry, I guess. And here's a strange coda to a strange story. Remember Tulsi's aunt, Sina, who spoke out to a few media outlets about Mike and Carol Gabbard's foray into the Science of Identity Foundation? Her name is Sina Vainana Gabbard, and she had an illustrious career in her own right. She was an accomplished writer and a poet. She was the first ever tenured Samoan American professor at the University of Hawaii. She taught in the English department. And she had plenty to say about her niece's rise to power. In 2022, she told The Independent, quote, "Once again, I find my niece's apparent penchant for parroting extremist toadies such as Tucker Carlson and vile strongmen such as Vladimir Putin to be problematic and deeply troubling." But in 2024, the retired professor was murdered in a theater in American Samoa by another poet. That poet, the murderer, was found dead in her jail cell before she could be sentenced for the crime, allegedly by her own hand. Now, when someone who's been publicly speaking out against a relative with ties to a secretive religious sect, the Modi government, Syria, the Trump administration, and Russia, and they wind up dead, and then their murderer winds up dead, kind of got to wonder. So there you have it, Alyssa. Tulsi Gabbard, let's rate her in our matrix of fucking guys.
I don't know, Aaron. This is a little bit of a tough one. I mean, she's definitely an opportunist, clearly. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with reckless dumbass and opportunist, because I don't think she's smart.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is a unique one, because I believe that she is being her views are not all her own views. I think
right.
that some of the things that she's doing are at the direction of somebody else. Now, who that somebody else is up for debate. But we've laid out some suspects in this script. So I would say that she's like a third category. I would say puppet.
Okay.
I would say she's a puppet and a zealot. But the zealot stuff aligns with whatever the puppet master says. Like,
okay, I'm into that. That makes a lot of sense.
I know, I'm breaking my own rules.
You know what? I'm like, I'm actually going to co-sign your new category.
Okay.
Because I believe that she and that white stripe, they're puppets. Aaron, that about wraps up the time we have for this episode of This Fucking Guy. If you like what you've seen, hit subscribe, share with your friends, and leave us a comment if you've got an idea for a future fucking guy we should spotlight.
This episode was written and researched by me with a writing assist from Alyssa Mastromonaco. All of the rest of the credits, as well as links to our sources like Christine Grelo's Meanwhile in Hawaii and Carrie Howley's work in New York Magazine, can be found in our show notes. Trust me, guys, the bibliography is always a fun read. If you want to just like get sucked into a rabbit hole, there is a plenty of material in there this time. Take care, be well. Remember, there's always a catch when it comes to beach-based yoga cults.
And fuck that guy.
Fuck that guy.